Tucson has a very particular look to it. You can drive from the center of town to the surrounding cities, and most of the front yards you'll see have saguaros, prickly pears, gravel, and stone. It's dusty, and many of the homes are made with adobe or brick to stay cool. Courtney Croson is an architect turned researcher at the University of Arizona, and she's been here for about 5 years.
I mean, the amazing thing about Tucson is, you know, when you get off a plane, step out of the airport, you feel like you're home because it has a very strong sense of place. There's no other place I could be than Tucson. Like, that's how I feel it, like in my bones.
And it really looks like a desert city, even for desert cities. And there's a big difference between Tucson homes and homes in the rest of the country. Most Tucson homes don't have grass. I'm Megan Myskowski, and this is Tapped, a podcast where we tell our stories, the stories of people living with the cost of drought in the Southwest, and what we can do to mitigate it. On this episode, how did Tucson pull up the grass and put in the cacti? And what does it still need to do to stay on track? And how can it make sure everyone can afford the upkeep? You'll remember in the last episode, we went to the Sweetwater Wetlands to meet Fernando Molina. He's the former head of the conservation program at Tucson Water. And he told us about how just a few decades ago, Tucson's water wasn't reliable. Sometimes people even turned on their faucets and nothing came out. So they upgraded the infrastructure, brought in a new water source, and they asked people to use less.
I started having to explain to people who hadn't lived here in the 70s and in the 80s and in the 90s, what does beat the peak mean? And I started talking about, well, you know, in the 60s and 70s we grew and we didn't have the infrastructure to meet demands, and a voluntary program is what the mayor and council came up with, and it was beating that summertime peak.
That summertime peak is when water usage is at its highest because grass is dry and people are watering their lawns. The typical household today in Arizona uses about 150 gallons of water every day. And the majority of that water, about 70% of it, goes outside to plants, pools, and car washing, among other things. And back then, that per household number was even higher. Tucson Water was struggling to keep the water on, especially on dry summer afternoons. So they launched a campaign asking people to stop watering their lawns then. Don't be wasting any water. We water every other day because we care about the flowers and the trees. In this one from the 80s, a woman in a bright purple suit with shoulder pads dances and sings about watering every other day. And in this one from the 90s, mascot Pete the Beak, a duck who also made appearances in Tucson schools, wears Western gear and swings a lasso. We always water when we please. We don't care what's right. Then
intercede our hero to remedy this plight. He's bound by his conviction. When people find out what I have done professionally working at Tucson Water, you know, I have these 30 and 40 and 50-year-olds go, hey, swaswa. SWASWA stands for Save Water and Save Water Again.
The campaign covered more ways to conserve water over the years.
So we still emphasize desert landscaping because that helps keep the peak down. We emphasize a lot of our training on proper irrigation methods because you don't want to overwater your desert plants.
And Tucson Water has helped people change out their lawns for those desert plants. It also helps them install low-flow toilets, another means of bringing down water usage.
So I always say, you know, we ask you to do it, we teach you how to do it, we'll train you how to do it, we'll give you a financial incentive, because another financial incentive is rebates. We'll help subsidize the cost of buying some of these new technologies. And if none of that works, then we make you do it, because there are some ordinances that mandate certain actions be taken.
At this point, there really aren't a lot of grass lawns left in Tucson.
I think if you were to move to Tucson and you were in your subdivision and you put a grass lawn out there, people would kind of scratch their heads and go, what are they doing?
Now, the push is for even more water-efficient yards. And Tucson Water and Pima County both offer training and rebates to help out with that. But the process of putting in a cistern, moving dirt around a yard to help the water flow, collecting gray water from laundry or dishes, that all isn't cheap. It usually costs between $3,500 and $6,000. Tucson Water offers up to $2,000 to help residents cover it. If you're a homeowner, those fixes can help you save a lot of money in the long run. But what if you can't front that cost?
So my name is David Zanauria. I manage the rainwater harvesting program for limited income families. It's a loan and a grant program.
Zanauria works for the Sonoran Environmental Research Institute, or SERI.
SERI's mission is to reach out to limited income communities and minorities in the Southwest to provide different services to improve their health and their living conditions and to protect the environment.
The program manages a grant from Tucson Water.
That's helped us to offer a grant up to $750 and a loan that is a zero interest loan for, you know, whatever cannot be covered between the grant and Tucson Water rebate.
SERI helps bridge the gap for residents who want the benefits of an efficient yard, whether it's small water bills, shade from trees, fruit, but can't afford it. They also do a lot of work to get the word out.
A lot of the population the organization work with, they don't have access all the time to internet or to technology. And because of that, it's hard for them to just go to a website, find all the information and be able to, you know, get access to these services. So sometimes they just don't know about the rebate. They don't know about what's out there.
So he and his colleagues go door to door to tell people about it. They also advertise it over social media. Zanauria says SERI has installed over 200 cisterns, more than 200 gutters, and 90 passive systems. They've also awarded over 250 grants and about 150 loans.
He took me to visit a client at her house.
Raquel Fregoso lives in Tucson, and on that day, she and David were making a plan to bring shade to a corner of her yard that gets too much sun to do much of anything with.
Fuera mi profesión, no lo escogería, pero sí lo hago bien con gusto y trato de cocinar lo más saludable que yo pueda.
Gardening, growing food isn't my job, and it's not something I would have sought out, but I still like to do it, and I like to cook as healthy as possible.
She also says she likes to do it because she likes to eat good food. When she's in her garden, she'll pull the leaf off an herb and taste it. She shows me a citrus tree.
No conozco yo que puedan ser, pero según el de hoja chiquita puede ser limón.
I don't know what it is, but the small leaves mean it could be a lemon tree.
She takes one to try and offers me one.
¿Este sabe como a naranja o a limón?
¿Puedo hacer lo mismo?
Sí.
It tastes a little sour.
Voy a un restaurante y le agarro como el mismo sabor de lo que yo cocino. A veces se me hace este más rico lo que yo cocino.
I'll go to a restaurant and get pretty much the same flavor that I would if I'd cooked it myself. Sometimes I even like what I cook better.
She calls her garden small, but it has fruit, vegetables, herbs, medicinal plants, and she's gotten help from the food bank to buy chickens.
Son 12, the 11 y el gallo 12.
There's 12, 11 chickens and a rooster.
They have a roomy chicken coop and roam free. She shows me where they eat and drink. And she really likes having the fresh eggs.
Me gusta que estén felices. Por eso les tengo el agua fresca. La comida, pues trato de que esté en la sombra, como donde casi no pega el sol. Y les hice esa cuenca con tierra sueltecita para que se bañen ahí.
I want them to be happy, and that's why I have fresh water for them, food, and I try to keep it in the shade where the sun won't hit it, and I made them a space with loose dirt so they can bathe there.
She's lived in this house for over a decade, but heard about Seri just a few years ago. They came out and installed her rainwater harvesting system, which includes a big green cistern on the side of her house and a pipe that runs underground to the chickens. And Seri keeps coming back to help her keep it up and work with her on new ideas.
Y sí quería hacerlo desde antes porque he escuchado y antes también escuchaba que como hay poca agua, entonces no quería gastar el agua de la llave porque pues quiero que la generación futura pues siga teniendo agua.
I wanted to do it before because I'd heard there's not a lot of water left here. So I don't want to waste tap water because I want the next generation to still have access to water.
So, by training, I'm an architect.
That's Courtney Croson, the architect and UA researcher from before.
And the last work I did, I worked as a sustainability consultant and focused on water.
She says getting homeowners on board is important, but that's not the end of it.
The problem in Tucson is that as we densified and covered up pervious areas where rain would naturally soak into the ground, is it, you know, it created more and more flooding. And you see this in a lot of American cities, you know, that are densifying.
She says it's hard to retrofit a city that's set up this way.
But another way that we can complement some of those bigger systems is green infrastructure, which simply means that you use vegetation, plant, soil to absorb that stormwater, use it, and buffer it.
It doesn't have to be prohibitively expensive for developers.
So if it's designed properly, not only am I putting in a tree, but if I put a basin in next to the tree, I can also start dealing with some of that stormwater as well.
And saving energy will ultimately mean saving water.
It's much better to build up for a few different reasons. Density is helpful because density increases walkability, which means that people aren't getting in their car and burning fossil fuels. Density also can create a lot of efficiency, meaning when you build a house by house by house, the amount of air conditioning, like energy put into those houses, is higher than if you had like a central plant and powered an apartment building.
And she says it saves water when we mix housing and other types of buildings, like offices.
So residential buildings have a lot of great gray water because of the showering. Showering and laundry use, you can get a lot of gray water. Office buildings, very little gray water. But if you put them right next to each other, and you could create a district water system, you could imagine, you know, using all that gray water to flush all the toilets in the system.
And that could put a big dent in bringing down water use.
Everything's clean to a potable standard, which is very energy intensive. And it's also just plain wasteful of that water. If you imagine that a home set up to use water multiple times or three times, we could, you know, cut our water use by a third or by a half.
Croson also says that the cost of water is too low, not just in Tucson, but across the country.
The price of water does not actually reflect its true value in society. And unless water is priced more highly, people are just simply not going to value it and not going to put these innovations into their home.
In recent years, Tucson has won awards and been sought out by other places looking to curb water usage.
Tucson is a great example of, yeah, culture change, really successful culture change around grass lawns. And I think we live in a community that's very successfully uses rock and natural adaptive vegetation in a very beautiful way to landscape.
And Croson says while more of that willingness to change from residents is important, those in power and those building new homes have to do more to make Tucson a city that can weather drought.
I do believe that the best changes that we can make are ones that are built in. That are designed into the way that we live versus telling people, you know, take a 1 minute shorter shower.
On the next episode, the U.S.-Mexico border crosses a lot of aquifers, and there's no one way it's regulated. In fact, there are a lot of ways. And it can change from state to state, town to town, aquifer to aquifer. And that's getting more complicated as the region gets drier.
Issues of immigration, issues of national security come into place, issues of sovereignty, issues of international water law, and all those principles that govern the relationships between countries have a say on this.
And this time, I'm going to have help telling the story from Chantal Koff-Schultz, a science writer for the Texas Water Resources Institute. And one more thing. We'll be off next week, but look for this episode on Monday, August 22nd. This episode of Tapped was reported, written, and hosted by me, Megan Myskowski. Jessica Stevens did our translation voiceovers. Duncan Moon is our editor. Christopher Conover is our news director at AZPM. Zach Ziegler is our production engineer, and JT Thorpe is our fact checker. The music you're listening to is by Michael Greenwald. Visit our website at azpm.org/tapped for pictures, links, and more.